is Speckled Bees.
My name is Spencer.
And my name is Lucy.
And we are here to talk to you a little bit today about messy play and other aspects of early childhood education. Yay!
This is the best topic.
I know. Oh, I can't wait to get into this. I don't know about you, but this is something that I think about all the time because it affects me as an adult and it affects the kids that I work with constantly. So
this is interesting. Looking at the parenting perspective is a little bit different too than even a teaching perspective. So yeah, I'm excited to get into this.
Now, I can't wait to hear your perspective on this because as a non-parent who looks at this as the teacher ready to engage, but doesn't go home with the messy clothes at the end of the day, I definitely have a very different mindset. So I'm very excited to get into this.
Oof, let's do it.
To jump right in, one of my all-time favorite quotes is, messy clothes are a receipt for a good time. I read this in a journal that was talking about the ways in which we have children explore the world. And it just comes down to the fact that messy clothing is our way of embracing our children's messy, intense, and embracing those results. Our little ones are experiencing, so why are we so quickly repulsed by that word mess? Like, this is their experiences shown in physical format. Why do we have this need to control the uncontrollable? Is it the fear of the mess that we have to clean up? Is it the fear of all that laundry we have to do? The discussions about not dragging mud into the hallway? I mean, let's just take a second, talk about messy play and how we can make the most daunting aspects of child mess the most enjoyable instead. That's our goal today.
I love that. I love that.
Thank you. Thank you. One of my favorite stories regarding messy play was about a child named C. C had a mother who was very open to messy play, but the father was a little less receptive and often used terms like, I don't want to buy my child a new wardrobe every week. So C loved mud. He loved to paint. And C was an ambitious toddler who tended to get these items on every part of his body. However, C hated things like paint smocks. That rough material gave him very little wiggle room, restricted his movements. It wasn't his favorite thing during art time.
They're so stiff.
They're so stiff. And there's some kids that get used to them. And I really don't blame the children who are honestly appalled. And when I'm doing art with a lot of my toddlers, if they don't want to wear a smock, I'm not going to make them wear one. It's not a good time. So dad was not happy if C came home with one of these messy shirts from a day when he wasn't loving the smock. And we didn't want to keep C from being involved in these activities, but we did want to keep dad on board and involved in these messy moments. So we wanted to help dad understand and teach him along with C how we could make mess an enjoyable part of the day. We had dad bring in one of his old dress shirts, and we used the shirt with a bit of cutting to make the arms a little more toddler sized in every future activity. We used the additional stains that were added with each weekly activity to identify with dad what materials we were using, what activities we were engaging in, and it really opened up a visual narrative for dad to directly see where and what his son's messes were coming from. So suddenly those stains on his shirt were no longer a chore to clean up. It was a story for dad to read with his son that explained the day-by-day adventures.
That literally gives me chills. I love that story. That is everything that we want to talk about messy play.
Exactly.
I love that so much.
It's a very good example as well of how messiness can be a receipt. He was looking at, there was a dark stain from clay work that day. And perhaps that clay piece that his son brought home was just, a little blob his son had thrown together. But instead, because he's seeing the mess his son's presenting with, he's understanding that that little blob his son's bringing home is more than just that. It was something he put effort into. He was stroking the clay on his shirt. He was actively engaging with it. And that's what mess is really doing. It's showing active engagement. It's not just an end product. It's the journey to that end product.
Right.
Mess is important. It's a step-by-step visual. I love it in the end of it all.
Right. And as a teacher, I really appreciate the effort that you put into like that conversation and the patience, because I'm sure it wasn't after like one day of getting new stains on the shirt that dad was able to stop and see the importance of it. It was from the consistency, from the communication. And I think that is one of the biggest things with parents is that constant communication.
Communication. Couldn't agree more. I think that's one of the biggest jar words. You know, it's communication opens up, and it's amazing how much a relationship can change with active communication between parent, whatnot. No, couldn't agree more with that. So that was a big aspect of a personal experience I had. And I wanted to open that up to you and see if you've shared the experience of being the teachers. We've been those teachers that get the kids messy. And we invite some disdain from parents by opening children up to some of these, you know, less, less structured situations.
And sometimes from the teachers too, like
right.
Having that conversation and reframing it. I think the language of like, we had a wonderful, messy day, reframing that all in the positive. This is a good thing that it's mess. I'm excited about this mess. I'm getting messy too. I'm going home and cleaning up my clothes. I'm letting my child participate in this and going home and cleaning their clothes. But yeah, so as far as my experience as a mom, it is interesting, particularly not to throw John, my husband, under the bus, but but you know, this is something before I was a mom, I was involved in this and knew the importance of messy play. And it still is something that I have to be conscious about, choosing which messes I am willing to clean up and which ones I am not, and figuring out how to, you know, we do a lot of our messy play in the bathtub, do a lot of paints in the bathtub and things like that.
It's a great way of wording it though, because we're not saying that mess needs to be an everyday part of life. It can simply also be, what can you constrain your time around? Can you make it part of bath time? Can you make it part of your outdoor time? It's not supposed to be a daily chore. It's supposed to be a part that integrates into your life. So I like you putting that out there. It's what can you manage at the end of the day? That's a really a good way of putting
right.
it.
Right. So I do think that has to come into play in the classroom or at home, being able to balance that and kind of pick your battles with it.
Yes.
The other thing was, although John spent a lot of time in the woods, he is very meticulous. He does not like messes.
Which, what a combination. It's quite wonderful the way his brain works.
Yeah, it is. It's very interesting to see. So he often gets very stressed out by the messes.
And there's another trigger word is stress. Stress and mess. It's quite a casual combination.
Yeah, they are companions. And so it's been interesting having this relationship of also educating him. He loves Leo so much. He wants Leo to have the best. So stopping and explaining in situations like, it's okay. This is what he's learning from it. This is the purpose of this activity. Okay. Even right now, while we are potty training, that is a very I don't know whether or not we should keep this story on the podcast. he knew he had to go poo. He waited a little bit too late. It was already coming out. He did sit on the toilet, but stood up. It was still hanging. It dropped the floor. He was walking around. He stepped in it. It smeared. It was such a mess. And John was at the door just dying as poop was just smeared all over the bathroom floor. It was a mess. It was a real legitimate mess. But having a conversation during, because that I've had a lot of experience with the bodily fluid with working with children for years and years. This was not the first time I've had to clean up poop off of multiple surfaces.
Right. Been there.
So it's a little bit easier to keep a level head during that than somebody who has not had quite as much experience with that. But during and after kind of having this conversation of like, the messes is how you learn.
Right.
That is important. You don't learn as much from no mess. If he always made it to the toilet, he would not learn the same things.
Right.
There is such a natural consequence in mess.
Precisely. And that's another aspect too, is the mess should not just be for the teacher and the parent figure to clean up after. the child should also be involved in the caretaking of the mess. It's taking control of the uncontrollable, because he couldn't control that that potty accident was going to happen, but he can control how he fixes it afterwards.
Yes.
So it's really an interesting aspect, is how do we take a mess and make it a little less stressful?
Mm-hmm.
So how did you have him handle that after? How did you talk with him?
To be honest, we are not having him clean up the poop messes. We probably should a little bit more. But with wanting it to be cleaned in a certain way, he's not quite as involved in cleaning up the bodily fluids. But yeah, like, he is present for the cleanup. We talk to him like, that's okay. You got this mess into the right room, but not quite the right spot.
I like that redirection too.
Yeah. And like acknowledging what they did correctly. And I think that is a big part of setting up these boundaries for when you're working with these messy materials. They're not going to be perfect the first time, but acknowledging the positive in what they're doing and then having them correct their mistakes, you know, clean up crayon, because they're going to at some point draw on the table or draw on the wall.
Right. You know, we actually had a really direct example of that exact situation a week or two ago in Leo's toddler classroom. We did a unit on Gyotaku fish printing. And the goal for the children was to fish out a hyper-realistic rubber fish that they would put the paint on and stamp the fish upon a piece of paper. And every aspect of this activity was meticulous and messy, because you had to fish the fish out of direct water, transfer it, clean it, and stamp it. And this was a huge, very interesting lesson for the toddlers to see how they handled this, because the more they messed around with the water, the messier they were, the more they lost of it. And we were not replenishing the water they used. So they had direct consequences the entire time, because they not only had to clean up the bigger messes they made, the big splashes, wiping it off the ground, but at the end of the session, we had no water left. It was such an exciting play, and it was messy. It was fun. It was messy. But in the end of it, they had a natural consequence, and they had natural exacting results to their actions. It wasn't just mess without boundaries. It was mess, and there was a clear end to it. I think that's another interesting aspect too, is setting appropriate and kind boundaries. The way that you expressed with Leo, okay, like we got it in the right area. Just, you know, we're going to work towards a better space in the future, and just talking with the kids and letting them know everything's fine. It's just making sure that we just fix any mistakes and keep things in a good boundary, in a good space.
That is a lesson, like, that's putting a huge, deep, complicated life lesson into the language and understanding of a child. We need boundaries. We're often going to be kind of in the right space, but not exactly the right spot with so many things in our lives.
Precisely. In my research, messy play is something I've always done research on in the past for my specific field of art education. But in looking into this more, I found this fantastic Scholastic article that addressed the fact that studies regarding messy play have shown we are developing our gross motor, our physical development is expanding with children beyond just how well is their fine motor working with substances that we give them. It moves into personal space and boundary issues. They have shown that children that engage more in messy play are more likely to have better social, emotional, and physical boundary regulation than children that don't. Because a big part of messy play is knowing when to stop and knowing when to give others their space.
I love that.
So I think this is a great example. I've seen this directly. You have kids that are painting, and there's a kid next to them that perhaps doesn't want to get involved or is actively expressing with their body language that they are not ready for paint time. And so the children are learning, the ones that are smocked, the ones that are painting, the ones that have clay in front of them are learning to keep these substances to themselves. They're learning to respect their personal space and the space of others. And I find that fascinating, that a simple lesson on mess can translate into space and boundary issues.
I love that so much. I hadn't put those ideas together, but it makes so much sense. It's a tangible thing for them to understand first, a concrete example first, for them to be able to understand these more abstract ideas of that.
Right. I mean, it's a big part, you know, if we're teaching a child early on how to clean up after themselves, it's more likely later in life they have better, you know, self-care abilities. But I did find it really interesting looking into this more, how many kids have really proven to have better social emotional boundaries because they are showing those physical boundaries. It's quite something.
Right. Well, even with physical boundaries, I've had a lot of teachers that I've had conversations with that they want to do kind of an exploration or project in their class talking about personal boundaries, like space
and
that sort of thing. And you have like the activity with a hula hoop.
Walk
around with the hula hoop around you to kind of show. Really, it's all proprioception.
Have you heard about this new one that Threes and Up is using called island reading? I was just introduced to this idea and I love this on a dramatic play level as well as a reading and social level. Children start the session and usually a song is played and it's like an island, like a, you know, Caribbean melody. And they're given a personal space item, whether that's a mat or like a hula hoop. They have to go find a space and that is their island. They go sit in their island with a book and they make their own space. Like they're on a deserted island with their own time and they enjoy that space. You put a huge emphasis on that space. I mean, can you imagine how much fun that would be with like a nature project or an art project? Send the kids off, find their own direction, take it beyond literacy and just go tell them, you know, like here's, now I keep going back to clay because clay is one of the best examples of controllable, messy items. Take this lump of clay, be gone with yourself, go make something for me, come back in 5 minutes when the song is done. And I can't wait to see what you've done with your personal space. See what you do. That also challenges them in an independency aspect. There's so many, personal space is such a
huge. Yeah, that's an activity I've done. And again, it's on the literacy side of things, but we did nature notebooks in nature class, where they all go off and they're supposed to draw or write what they see from their perspective. And that may be my favorite activity of all time, especially like the older children. A lot of them, what they wrote was poetry and what they drew was just amazing, like to be able to have a space to themselves where they're not influenced by anyone else. It's a powerful moment for children.
No, it really is interesting. I mean, but we all learn this in early ed, and it's that a huge learning curve with twos and ups is that control aspect. What can they control in life and what do they have the power to manipulate, exert their own prowess over? So things like having their own space and dictating their own environment and lesson. I mean, it really, really makes a big difference in how they engage in the lesson. And just to wind that back to messy play.
Sorry, I took a little tangent.
No, you're fine. It all goes hand in hand. That's what makes it so fun. That is a big part, though, I feel like, of messy play is it's the self-control part, is what can they control? What are they in charge of? We're constantly telling the kids to keep it clean. Well, where's the fun? Where's the personal expression? There's nothing creative about that. There's nothing interesting about that. So I do find it really interesting how we have devolved into a topic on personal space and personal expression, because it all goes back to each other. I couldn't love that enough.
Yeah, I love that. Very interesting. And something that we all want. We all want our children to have. We try a lot of different ways to be able to teach them this. And that is one of the best ways to just let them have some messy play.
Right. And again, it's back to the earliest subject on this. It doesn't have to be super messy. It's what we can control and what we can enjoy because it should be enjoyable. We're not telling anybody to go off and, you know, throw their kid in a pit of mud, which is still fun. But
I'm telling everyone to go and throw their children in a pit of mud. But
it's, if you know that that's something that can't be handled in the day, there's not enough time aspect to it. It's all about what is a control. I don't love the word controllable, but what is a manageable mess? Mess should be made in a way that it can be enjoyed on both sides of the spectrum. Parent, teacher, authority figure, child, and how can we best explore that realm together, not as individuals?
I agree. And I don't know if you want to talk about this now or circle back to it at the end. I think it would be a cool idea for us to go over a couple of tips on how to make it more manageable.
Yes, I would love to do that. So in regards to tangible, messy play tips, one of the best things back to the earlier story we could recommend is consistent, and I know that you did this in nature class, access to alternative clothing options. It is best to have smocks or the tougher suits that you used in your nature classes. It's something that is easy to slip on and off of clothing to make mess more manageable in a physical aspect.
Let's get sponsored by Tuffo Suits. And everywhere I've worked, again, because having this nature education career, everywhere I've worked, Tuffo Suits have been a part of it.
They're amazing. They're so easy to go on and off.
Yep.
And they protect every part of the clothing. I mean, those Tuffo Suits, whip them off. That's how you solve a muddy day. I mean, it sounds like a simple solution, but it is one of the realest ones, is having messy clothes alternatives, whether that's a smock, a Tuffo suit, or as an adult, an apron. I live off my aprons. I can wear a nice outfit as an adult and my clothing is saved by whatever apron I'm wearing on top.
But even once you have a clothing item that is messed up, you can't clean it enough, just have a bin of clothes that is your messy clothes bin that you can throw on those clothes when you know you're going to have a messier day, put on those clothes. And there's a whole subject, whole tangent we can go on of like, there is legitimate research that shows that teachers are kinder to the kids who are dressed nicer. So we can't throw that out the window and just expect all parents to be okay with sending their children in their grubbies.
It's a fascinating subject.
But to, on certain days, have those ready. If you at home, there are days that we know that we're gonna go outside and have a messier day and follow the weather. If it's rained recently, have those clothes at your disposal. So if you're gonna go outside after it's rained,
right,
your child will probably find a puddle. Is having the appropriate clothes to begin with.
Could not agree enough. I just had a class and I was so impressed by this because it had rained the night before. There was a summer storm and the kids knew that they should have rain boots. Every kid came in with a nice pair of rain boots. We were doing a sun-based art project and we had to find direct sunlight on the child's patio. Only sunlight on the whole patio was next to a massive puddle. And who was I to tell them that they could not go in that puddle, especially because they were dressed for it? And let me tell you, that made art so much more enjoyable to take these two-year-olds out. We would walk outside. And then as soon as they placed it with great care, they ran right into the puddle, had a little romp about, and it was back inside to go have more art. And it was the perfect combination. And it was really doable because they were dressed so well for the day. Now, not say I wouldn't have let them have the same romp if they hadn't had their nice little rain boots on. But man, did it really elevate their experience. They were weather appropriate. They were excited. They knew and understood that they could get messy like that. One of the biggest aspects that changes the dauntingness of mess is the simple preparedness of the environment. The things that we can affect are our clothing. And segueing into the second part, and again, it sounds so straightforward, but we forget it a lot, is covering surfaces. If it's something you can do when you're outside, even at nature, you use picnic blankets, I believe, when you were in the field, and
yeah,
we use them in the classroom. We constantly have drop cloths and tablecloths. It makes such a big difference because instead of wiping down a surface, you just sweep it up and throw it in the wash. The simple tricks are the simple tricks for a reason. They make the biggest difference. And that's my biggest aspect that I can add to making messy clean more enjoyable on the direct front, is having accessible items to adapt your environment to the mess. Drop cloths always, coverings always. Life is 10 times simpler with the addition of those environmental changes.
And I could see that is actually helpful for the children to have this defined physical boundary. It is so much easier to keep a child in a spot that has a defined physical boundary.
Right. And back to managing mess, instead of having to chase the mess, it's managing the mess ahead of time.
Yep.
Mess does not need to be stressed, and that cannot be emphasized enough. I feel like it all is within boundaries. If you know that you have a long day ahead of you, you're working from home, you're with your child, then maybe you don't want to whip out the acrylic paints and have them go wild on the table. Maybe it's whipping out some watercolors that are easy cleanup, easy fixes, and aren't going to give you a long stress at the end of the day. Throwing that tablecloth down, popping on some prints, having a good time. It doesn't need to be stressful.
Mm-hmm.
We can adapt with it, and we can teach our child to respect those boundaries of how we want to embrace mess.
Right.
Not to not embrace some of the bigger messes, because that should always be a go-to.
Right.
But there's levels.
Right. And we have Reggio roots, taking advantage of that third teacher, the environment.
Right.
Not having to be there and police it the whole time, being able to step back and enjoying what is happening, the processes that are happening, because the environment has already set up these boundaries, has set up this space.
Right. So making the environment adaptable, making it easy. You know, on that note too, one thing I found that has personally eased a lot of my stress as a teacher when it comes to messes, and we were talking about this a little earlier, was engaging the child in the cleanup and maintenance aspect as well.
Yes.
I've noticed some of my favorite classroom environments, and back to having a physical idea of mess, less stress, is having child-sized cleanup items.
Yes.
Whether it's those little dustpans or it's wet wipes at an easy access level. I love teaching the child the art of wetting a napkin and rubbing that across the surface. Like, it makes all the difference. And let's be honest, children want to be involved in things. The same way that mess can be great fun, so can cleaning, because it's something that they're not usually as easy access to.
One thing that I've discovered too is that we give children jobs and they like having jobs. They get tired of the same type of job. So yes. Most of the responsibility that you give to children that is in the realm of cleaning is putting things away. That's all they're doing is putting things away, which is a good thing for them to be doing. And it's really important. But I did a lesson one time that was about cleaning, and my co-teachers were like, they don't like to clean. It's impossible to get them to help clean. You know, it's such a struggle.
Do they not like to clean or? Right.
But they loved it because we brought in at the school, we were using microfiber cloths. And so we brought out a bunch of those. We brought out all of the child-sized brooms. We, you know, just all of these additional things, these wiping, brushing, that kind of cleaning that they don't get to be involved in as much. And they went crazy for it. They loved it. Again, had no interest in putting the toys away that day.
Right.
But they did a good part of our close down work because they had already wiped down every surface in the classroom.
It's amazing.
They like the variety.
Right.
Leo has a little child-sized broom and things like that, and it gets used a decent amount.
Right. It's especially working and being in Reggio. We have noticed that when we engage children in items that are beyond the norm, not a plastic fire truck, but a wooden dowel rod instead, it's giving them items that are beyond the norm tend to be more interesting than, and that's a big part of the Reggio philosophy, but it is a big part of child development, is they want to engage with substances that they do not see in everyday life, or on the flip side, they do see that they see the adults using. So having them do those cleaning items, I mean, it's what a responsibility, first off. I mean, not in a more literal form, but what a figurative responsibility.
Right. A demonstration of trust, really. And respect. Right.
That's a great point. There is such a happiness I've seen in children when you imbue trust in them. We did a cleaning art unit once.
Yeah.
With the toddlers, and it was the funniest unit because everything I do has to have a little artistic touch to it. And while I do not always focus on the end product, I don't mind if there is something that comes out of it.
Right.
And so we had children use a different cleaning tool, whether it was sponges, brooms, a vacuum, even one time, a little push one. We would let them use it, learn how to use it, and then introduce a painting format with it. So it was like sweeping the floor, and then we put down a giant canvas and we had to sweep across the canvas.
Right.
The best part was we led up the whole thing to a massive car wash at the end. We put down a huge sheet of white paper and they washed a bicycle with colored water, and everything that dripped on the ground turned into all these beautiful paint splatters.
Oh, I love that.
And it was so much fun. We had put mud on the little bike as well, so they could actually see what was going away. But I, again, like, love how this is segueing back to earlier topics. It was the easiest thing to clean up because they literally cleaned up the muddy bike for us. But the art was the floor covering. All we had to do was roll that up, you know, wipe a little bit of the residual water away underneath. It was the easiest thing. It was so much fun. I mean, it was cleaning up dirty bike, and that made the best art piece, this massive sudsy bubbles art piece. It was so pretty. We had that up on the wall for a long time. Oh, I loved it. I loved every part of it.
That is so cool. I just wanted to mention one of the things that I use. Well, two things. I use a bar of soap called Felt's Naphtha Soap, and you can search it. Like, there, it's at hardware stores, most big box stores, and Amazon has it.
You've mentioned this before, and I've been dying to buy a bar of the soap.
Oh, let's get sponsored by them as well.
How do you spell that?
Yeah. So Felt's Naphtha. It's FELS-NAPTHA. Felt's Naphtha. That is the only thing that I can find to get out, like the Virginia Red Mud, that the only thing that comes close. Generally, there's a little residue still, but for on clothes, you can't bleach, really. That is what I'd use.
I think that's a great recommendation. And when in doubt, scrub it out. I mean, that's...
Yeah. Having the ability to clean clothes out, the cleanup makes... There's so much less stress to the mess, you know?
Right.
Then one that is just a trick for parents at home that preschool teachers use a lot is putting Dawn or like dish soap into your paint.
Yep.
Then it washes out a lot easier.
It's an instant and a great trick. First off, the paint consistency is still fantastic and it still adheres very nicely.
Yeah. Sometimes it makes it paint even like smoother. It's just such a life-changing trick.
Yep.
And then the last one is just with some stains, obviously, you're going to want to clean it up right away.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have a specific basket as a mom that I put the clothes that I'm pretty sure are going to need some scrubbing, but they don't need to be cleaned immediately in that moment. And I keep that basket specifically for a week. Then I go through and do a load of laundry where I just scrub it out all at once. And it is very helpful to kind of postpone the mess, I guess.
That's a great idea. I like
just
that.
Where I can save it for a time that's more manageable.
Right.
Sometimes you have to do it right away, but sometimes you can leave it sitting for a little bit.
Yeah, I could not agree with that enough. It's definitely, as an art teacher, my wardrobe is quite defined by the clothes that are covered in stains that I could never get out again. I work with a lot of pigmented paints, namely acrylics.
Don't use acrylics with your children, probably.
Do not use acrylics. I feel like that cannot be said enough. First off, they're toxic. If your child is still ingesting paints, I highly do not recommend them unless they're bagged. Obviously, under supervision, acrylics can be great. But the biggest aspect of why they are so popular as adult substances is they are highly pigmented. They will stain your clothes. There is very little. I'm actually wearing a dress right now that is covered in stains on the base because of acrylic paints. There's very little chance that will come out. The best thing I recommend on a practical note, if you ever have acrylic paints, because you really want to paint a birdhouse, for example, or paint an object that goes outside, often needs to be done with acrylics because it is hyperpigmented.
Yeah.
Tied pens have saved my life on a million times. They really, there's a reason they're marketed so heavily.
Yeah.
If you have that one really tough stain, and it is because of a very advanced art material like a tie-dye dye or an acrylic paint, tied pens pinpoint. It's like a direct shot of cleaning supplies into that one area without bleaching. And on the same note, my toughest stains to ever get out after a messy play aspect with a higher art form, I'm doing quotation marks right now, because higher art, I more so mean the ones that are very tricky to deal with, like Sharpies, acrylic paints, dyes, magic erasers, the white chunky sponges that are imbued with chemicals.
Yes.
Again, not great for under the age of 3 because of the toxicity, but gosh, did they do the job. So those are my two practical tough stain removers. Mm-hmm. Those, again, those are for the very extreme stains. magic erasers are my best friend. Oh my gosh. I mean, those things strip paint off of walls. Have you ever tried that to scrub a, like parents, have you ever tried to scrub a marker off a wall with a magic eraser? It takes everything. It takes it all. It's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I think a quick Google search, that has been a huge thing with having a co-parent who is very, very stressed out about messes. The power of knowing how to clean things up has been a game changer. Showing him, this is something that can be cleaned. This is okay. We can, yeah, like I know how to get out this. I know how to clean up this mess has been a huge change. And so like for you as a parent, you as a teacher, to have that knowledge, you know, cleaning pen marks out of your clothes with alcohol, mm-hmm. even like hand sanitizer, those sort of things. Learning those little tricks on how to clean out those tough stains
makes a huge difference. And again, it's all about, back to the earlier subjects, managing the space, managing your time. It's making the mess stress-free. I mean, I have so many, beyond the parent aspect goes to the teacher aspect. I have teachers that I know, for them, a overt mess is very stressful. So maybe we do take lessons that provide them a less stressful experience. Or on the flip side, I have teachers, I work with a lot of infant teachers, and we are very communicative about whether or not a lesson is going to be a messy lesson or their art is going to be a clean one. They do want to know that because, and I feel like anybody can involve this in their artistic or natural experiences, making sure there's time to clean up after, making sure you include the cleanup and the fix-up time afterwards into your activity. That cannot be said enough because it really does make a difference on the stress. If you're allotting an hour, maybe 15 minutes of that should be 15 minutes of cleanup, 15 minutes of straightening up. It's not trying to take the joy of the mess away, because that's the big point of this topic right now, is we want mess to be there for the kids, but we also want them to understand that mess has boundaries, because just like everything in life should have boundaries. That's important. That's healthy. That's life.
Yeah. I agree. There's one thing that was kind of in your notes that we didn't cover yet that I think kind of goes into this topic pretty well, talking about showing children that you can clean up messes is kind of an important thing for anxiety, for those sort of things. Mm. I have a child. We've talked to you about how he has a little bit of some OCD tendencies. He does not. Of course, my child would rebel and not like to get messy.
Which is utterly shocking. I still can't believe.
Yeah, it's just that is how life works. But yeah, he does not like to get messy. It stresses him out. So being able to show him that we can clean up messes, that it's fine.
Right.
I think, again, being a lesson, a tangible lesson that goes into more abstract, that life is messy and it's okay. We can clean it up. We can figure things out. There's always consequences, but we can find some solution. And then I also just think that it's really important for children in general, but especially children who don't like to get messy, to work with them and let them get messy, have them work through those sensory processing struggles. It's important because it will get worse.
Yep.
If they're not exposed to that, those situations are going to make them so much more anxious as they get older.
Right.
And you're going to get messy at some points. You're going to have to deal with substances that you don't want to deal with.
This is such an important point to make because I feel like throughout this whole conversation, we've talked about how the authority figures deal with the mess. And it's especially because we have worked with classroom settings in more than two children. I mean, many parents are exposed to their children alone. We forget the fact that there's a lot of kids that do not like mess. It's not just the adults.
Yeah.
And it's so important to recognize that. I mean, I have to admit, when I went to school for art education and I did my teaching assistances, I did my in-person trainings, it was mostly older age groups. And when I came down to a preschool early ed level, I honestly took offense a few times when I first started teaching to children that were turned off by art. I had this one child I can specifically think of, and he was 3, and he had diagnosed sensory issues, and it wasn't just in art, it was also in food, it was also in physical play. And instead of, admittedly, I was a little taken aback. I was like, wow, this child is not like me. I took it as a personal thing. I said, he is not like art, he does not like me. And instead of taking a step back from him and letting him experience his own things, like maybe going off and reading a book during art, instead I adapted my lesson specifically to make sure that it was more enjoyable, that he could participate. And now this kid is 5 years old and he does art regularly with me. He's actively engaged. He's a very excitable artist. It was just changing things up. Perhaps if we were painting and it was acrylics, it was a heavy acrylics, giving him some gloves, that made all the difference. Having it be a longer brush. Some kids, we have them work very specifically on that full fisted grip. It's really important with kids for their muscle memory with their hands. We give them these really broad headed brushes. For kids that have sensory issues, they might need a longer, delicate brush, so they're not directly getting up close and personal with those paints. It's a huge, huge part of its adaptation. Perhaps the things that might be normal for one age group does not translate well for the children that do not want to get touchy and messy with the substances they're working with.
Yeah, I actually, again, I don't think either of us had any intention of covering this, but that's actually a really important aspect. We've been talking about the teachers, the parents who don't like the messes, but there is this whole other side of the coin is once we understand how important messy play is, you still have to let children listen to their bodies and set their own boundaries. You know, I want, especially as being a nature teacher, I want all the children to dive head first into the mud and be covered head to toe in it. That is what I feel like is super important. And you have children who don't like that. And occasionally you'll have teachers who pick up children and put them in the mud. And
right.
And they're totally well-intentioned. They want, these adults want their children to experience these activities that will help them. But we really need to still be respecting children's boundaries. And as you do that, as they feel safe, they feel they're in a safe space where they are respected, they will more and more enter into play. This is the thing with Leo, that he does not like to get messy. So we have to make sure we're not pushing that on him, because that could backfire and make it a whole lot worse. But checking in with him, letting him know that it's okay, having us show the example sometimes it's all about the adult being willing to engage in the messy play.
Right.
That's not comfortable for all adults. So
we lead by example, right?
Yeah. But yeah, being able to let them proceed. Yeah, I'm rambling now, but yeah.
Like, no, you're so on point, because it cannot be expressed enough that I would like to proudly say, I always think this way. We often forget that children are not just children. They are tiny humans. Mm-hmm. They do have these same feelings that we do, the same senses of obligation or senses of right and wrong and what they would purpose. They just haven't developed as much as we have. And I feel like that's so important to recognize in kids, is that what we may be perceiving in as upset could be a lot more than upset. If they are upset with, I'm going to lead it back to this child, but upset with painting, maybe it's not that they are upset. They are uncomfortable. They are uneasy. They are nervous. There's so many other words for it. And if we respect, I love that you were saying that, respecting how they feel and we're acknowledging how they feel, we are elevating their art experience or their nature experience. I can't help but like saying that, because it really does. It makes such a difference in how we show them that messy play can be made messy on so many different levels.
Yes.
Do we want it to be ultra muddy, messy, and ultra painty, squishy, messy? Or can we take it down a notch and can we make it that your messy is, oh, you're flashing a bit of color around, or you're, you got a nice leaf in your hand, and you're crumbling that up and you're experiencing those softs, you know, this, it's what is your experience and how do you make it?
Yeah, it's personal. That could be an extreme, awesome breakthrough situation for this one child, where it's like baseline,
right?
You know, you have the children who roll in the mud. You have some children who put their finger in the mud for the first time. And that is a big,
huge,
solid deal. And for them, yeah, to feel safe. And like, you know, this importance of being aware of your body, having control over your own body, having autonomy. We're teaching children that they are in charge of their bodies. They get to call the shot on how their body interacts with the world.
No, like this is a mildly, I don't want to use the word controversial. I know a lot of people don't agree with me on this. I cannot stand it when I've had some students turn to other co-learners and they say, well, the teacher told you to do that, so you have to do it. Nothing I say is the thing you have to do. Now, what I appreciate if you engage with me, do I appreciate your respect and you learning with me? Yes, I do. But nobody can ever make you do anything. Yeah. You choose what you want to do. And there are consequences at the end of the day, but you have the choice to your autonomy and what you're choosing to do with yourself.
Yep.
And that runs a whole gambit of other issues.
Yeah, that's a whole nother subject.
The biggest point that runs to in this specific sense is mess parents, teachers, kids, if you're not comfortable, you set those boundaries. There is nothing you should be made to do that you don't have to. A mess should not be an obligation. It should be an experience.
Yeah.
There's no experience should always have the part, you know, experience. It should be fun experience, enjoyable experience. Yeah. No one should have a bad experience. Like those words do not go well together. Mm-hmm. I'll throw my own little personal story in with this because I find it interesting that the two messies that we keep throwing out there are mud and paint. And when I was a child, and I figured this out later in life, I hated mud and I hated clay. And I found out later in life, it's because I was allergic to it. So, which I get a lot of weird looks when I say that as an adult, because if kids hand me chalk, I have to glove up. I have to wear gloves to touch chalk. And it's kind of a contradiction, but I would often say that one of the reasons I'm okay with a lot of those materials is I had a very flexible mother growing up. I was very adverse to clay. She loved clay. And instead of saying, wow, my daughter hates muds and hates clays, I should keep her away from it, my mom enrolled me in a pottery class to get me used to it. But it wasn't like she threw me in and said, get over it. It was, she threw me in and we got gloves, and she threw me in and we got scoring material. So I wasn't touching it up close. And those ended up being, I ended up doing that for like 4 summers when I was a kid. And that was some of my best memories, was working with clay for 4 summers straight. This is a very weird program. It was at the zoo. So it was often working with clay and then making animals at the zoo. So I would make like families. It was talk about childhood memories.
Yeah.
And that's another fun thing is like, how can you also adapt unique experiences to your child? So, but that was such a learning experience because now that I know as an adult why I was so adverse to those substances, I am so grateful that I had those experiences because I am, as an adult, still open to them.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's really it's funny how that stuff works out.
Yeah. Also, just along with that story, and I will cover this as we cover other topics, but that just reminds me of let's see how to word this. Most of the memories that you have, they're triggered by something sensory.
Right.
You know, you have those smells that, oh, that's my grandpa right there. That's
right.
You
know, right.
You have all of these memories that are associated with smells and with tastes and with feelings. You can remember playing outside, games you played as a child, often because you're touching, you're having the sensory experience. So depriving children of these sensory messy experiences, you're depriving them a lot of memories.
I mean, can you imagine? I mean, what a great point that is, because if we never get involved in mess, what memories are we making? That's what a great point, Lucy, because now that I'm thinking about it, every core memory is associated with those touch, taste, smell. If I'd never had that opportunity, would I have those strong associations? That's a really, really poignant view there.
Oh, thank you.
Well, and I guess that's what it comes down to in the long term is, why are we advocating so much for messy play? It's because we're advocating for a childhood experience that is one worth remembering. It engages us better with our kids. It engages us better with the world around us if we're accepting the messes that we get into, and take that as a larger metaphor too. accept the messes you get into and just clean them up as you go. Deal with it as it comes. Words to live by.
I love that. I have nothing to add. I think that was a great summary.
I start crying into my mind. All the feelings.
You have been listening to The Speckled Bees, a celebration of childhood. Next week, we will be discussing risky play. If you'd like to hear more from us, please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Thank you so much for listening.
Oh, sorry. I just now thought of like a little opening song. It was like, so that's in my head right now.